and welcome everybody. I'd appreciate it.
Great, Pam. I'm glad to do that. So my name is Brent Christopher, and I get the privilege of chairing the Legislative Network Committee for Philanthropy Southwest, which means I get to work with Pam and a great committee of folks from across the membership of Philanthropy Southwest who are very interested in matters related to advocacy and lobbying, which, of course, is the topic that is front and center for the webinar today. Advocacy is such an incredibly powerful tool for philanthropy. And yet, unfortunately, for a lot of us, it still remains something that's kind of clouded in mystery, and we may be a little reticent to step out and take advantage of the opportunities to participate in advocacy efforts because we aren't sure exactly where those boundary lines are and what is within the range of things that are permissible and what are the things that are not exactly permissible. And even if something is permitted, how do we feel comfortable knowing the best way to engage with policymakers and the public around advocacy for the issues and causes that are central to our mission in philanthropy. So when it comes to addressing that topic, there's really nobody better in the state of Texas to step in and do that than Jason Szabo. Jason, I've had the privilege of knowing for a number of years. He is the founder of Frontera Strategy now, but he has been working with philanthropy and nonprofit organizations, particularly around public policy issues, for a long time. And he has the benefit both of a wealth of experience and professional success in this area and being an incredibly gifted communicator and just a lot of fun to talk with. So I know it's going to be a great session during this webinar with Jason. And that said, I'll get out of the way and turn it over to you. Welcome, Jason.
Well, thank you so very much for that introduction. And I'm really honored to be talking to you all today. And I hope that we can make the most of the more or less hour that we have left together. And I want to make sure that folks feel very comfortable as we're going along, interjecting, stopping me, asking questions. If I'm understanding the technology, your questions will appear here on the screen, but you can also just unmute your phones and yell them out as well. So, again, if you could keep phones muted, I know that there's always that point in a conference call when somebody has to get on hold, and that's like the worst part for everybody else. So if we could remember to keep our phones muted, it would be great. So what I'd like to do is first make sure that the external control of my slides is working. So can we go to the next slide? Let me hit that. Here we are. So here is that Twitter slide that every presentation must have. So if everybody could, who's interested in following along with today's conversation online, there's my Twitter account as well as the philanthropic folks Twitter account. And I hope that we'll all remember that we can always include the hashtag philanthropy to make sure that people outside of our world are watching the conversation that we're having in our world. So let's move on to the next slide. So what I really wanted to talk today about, kind of very, very specifically getting an overview, is first, you know, let's talk about this general idea of policy work and how it relates to foundations and philanthropy. How can nonprofit organizations get themselves involved in what's happening in state legislatures and county commissioners meetings in Washington, D.C.? How can foundations get themselves involved in that world? Then we'll talk a little bit about the difference between advocacy and lobbying. We'll talk a little bit about, you know, kind of as was alluded to earlier, what nonprofits can do under the law, under federal law, and a little bit about what they're not allowed to do. Then we'll talk a little bit about how foundations and philanthropies can get themselves involved in public policy and do it in a way that really isn't driven by anyone else's priority and timelines, but by your own unique priority and timelines. I always, you know, say, and I've learned from other people, that if you've seen one foundation, you've seen one foundation. And I think that it's important to understand that everybody has their own, you know, place on the continuum of whether or not they want to get involved in this and how much they want to get involved. We'll talk a little bit about different strategies for engaging this process. Do you want to do it by yourself or do you want to do it with partners? And then we'll talk specifically about a couple of case studies. One, a foundation who worked very much by themselves on an issue, and another, a growing consortium of foundations here in Texas concerned about public education that as of today is up to 31 members, which is pretty amazing. So we'll talk about those two case studies, and then we'll open it up for questions and answers. But at any point in the conversation, please feel free to stop me with whatever questions you might have. So that's kind of the gist of where we're going with the presentation today. So let's just jump right into it. So next slide, please. So I really want to emphasize to folks as we're setting out that I spent the majority of my time working at the Texas legislature, which, as many of you know, is a pretty conservative place. And I'm not making any assumptions here based upon partisan affiliation because, you know, the majority of the legislation that I do move in Texas is moved by Republicans, not Democrats, just because that's the politics of the world in which I live. But I really think it's important to understand that when we're talking about how you can be successful in this context, just within this last 2015 legislative session, the philanthropies and the nonprofit organizations just with whom I've worked were able to move significant legislation on a whole range of issues. And they did so with really astonishingly little money invested in the process. So if you can imagine yourselves getting involved in public policy, the reality is, regardless of the political context in which you're working and the issues in which you're working on, there is a path to success and for you to move an agenda around whatever policy you're interested in. So regardless of what your aspirations might be, just understand that this is a very doable equation we're talking about here. This is not rocket science. Otherwise, somebody like myself wouldn't be leading a session teaching people how to do it. Otherwise, you know, obviously. So next slide, please. But we really think about this from the foundation perspective. I mean, remembering that many people on the phone call today either are or work for people who in the private sector are able to make a lot of money. They know how to invest that money well, and otherwise they wouldn't have that money. So one of the things that we always remind foundations and philanthropists about is kind of this idea that you come looking for the ROI because you understand what ROI is. You made dollars by investing dollars, so when you're giving those dollars away, you're not going to make that investment. That's one of the reasons that you can really kind of stand tall in the eyes of legislators and the people who are involved in the process of making laws and changing the society around us, because they see you as peers. You're not there to rattle the tin cup because you've got, in some cases, a silver cup of your very own. So you don't need anybody else's tin cup. And that's a different perspective than people hear, and that's why you really need to be engaged in this, because it is where you can achieve the biggest impact. Also, many of the grantees that you already fund are already doing this policy work, whether or not you know it and whether or not they tell you about it. The question isn't just, are they doing it legally? The question is, are they doing it well, and are they doing it with an eye toward achieving your shared common interests in moving an agenda at whatever political entity level you're looking at, be it a state legislature, a county commissioner, a city council. Also, there's another reason for foundations to get very seriously involved in all that and all of this policy work. It's because the public sector is slowly but surely absolving its responsibility for a lot of its basic functions to private philanthropy. We see this in every kind of context around the country, where we see that gradually the private sector stepping in to fulfill responsibilities that have traditionally been held by the public sector. If the foundation and nonprofit and faith communities don't do it, nobody will, and in many ways that's our downfall because we ultimately do it. Also, we have to remember that foundations really have to get involved in the policy work, really funding all this stuff, because there's so many different ways that you can get involved. There's no right way, there's no wrong way, there's only your way. And understand that if you're kind of approaching this with an open mind, there's a place where everybody has their comfort zone on what we call this policy funding continuum. Next slide, please. Now, a lot of people have lots of reasons for not funding policy work. I've heard all of them over the years from every place, you know, big and small across the country. Number one, working on public policy issues is inherently political, and we just don't do politics. Any politics are bad politics, and we don't touch politics. Additionally, there's a fear of antagonizing lawmakers and other business and community leaders. You got to be careful about who you make mad. You got to go about this in a manner that doesn't make anybody mad. Additionally, a lot of folks just don't understand. A lot of nonprofit lobbyists and a lot of nonprofit accountants, a lot of nonprofit lawyers don't understand lobby law. They don't understand exactly what nonprofit organizations are and are not allowed to do. And in not understanding, often err justifiably on the side of caution and will be paralyzed by a sense of caution that in many places is completely overblown. You got to be smart, you got to be cautious, but you don't have to be paralyzed. And finally, many organizations simply don't fund policy work, don't fund advocacy by other nonprofit organizations, don't fund lobbying, because they never have, and it's entirely new and uncharted territory for them. So next slide, please. Now, and I will speak a little louder. Thank you for the comment. Now, when we talk about advocacy and lobbying, and I talk a lot about lobbying very specifically. The advocacy and lobbying are two very, very different things. Advocacy is a very broad and general term referring to a very broad and general position. Poverty is bad for kids. I'm an advocate. I'm going to go to the Capitol and say, poverty is bad for kids, and I'm going to stand proud on that message. That's advocacy. I'm not asking for anything specific. I'm making a broad statement. Lobbying, under federal definitions, begins when an organization or entity or an individual has a specific request. Poverty is bad for kids, therefore support House Resolution 972 to make poverty less bad for kids. That's lobbying. Advocacy, there's nothing specific being requested. Lobbying is when you get specific and very, very focused and targeted. So the question ultimately becomes, what are you allowed, how do you engage? Now you know what you're allowed to do, and you know that lobbying is the more specific version of advocacy. How do you engage, and with whom do you do it? So next slide, please. Now, nonprofits have a lot of leeway about what they're allowed to do, a lot of leeway. You can communicate with elected officials and tell other people to do the same thing. You can meet with members. You can testify at public hearings. You can support or oppose specific legislation. You can provide research. You can invite legislators to visit. Next slide, please. But there are certain things you cannot do, which are specifically raise funds for candidates as an organization. So you can go out and raise money for somebody. You cannot publicly support or oppose a candidate. You cannot conduct partisan voter registration, meaning you can't go to the side of town where everybody's a Republican and only register voters there because you want to get more people registered as Republicans. You have to be equitable in your approach. You cannot electioneer. And the one thing that I always urge all nonprofits and foundations fund to do is to take what's called the H election, which is a very, very simple form which simply tells the IRS our organization might be lobbying. And when you do this, a whole bunch of very clear and very specific parameters kick in, which we don't have time to talk about today, but I'd be happy to talk with anybody about at a later time. Now, next slide, please. Now, many of the things that I'm going to urge you to do as we're going forward in this presentation today are the most powerful and impactful things that you can do. But they're also, interestingly, the things that are the least likely to count against what is called a lobbying expenditure or even be reportable under the IRS definitions of what lobbying is. The stuff that's the most powerful isn't even lobbying, because in many ways what you're doing is mobilizing your own most powerful constituency, which is the foundation trustees themselves. As we're going to go along, and we'll talk a lot about that, and that's one of the more interesting things that I think is beginning to happen in Texas that we need to discuss, because it's the most powerful thing that we can do. And that's not lobbying, because what you're essentially doing is lobbying via your volunteers. Many other things are not lobbying. Self-defense, foundations looking out for their own interests, that's not considered lobbying because it's being done in self-defense. Under federal law, communication with your executive branch or the people who run state agencies where the actual rubber hits the road, that's not lobbying. Again, lobbying by your trustees and other volunteers does not count as a lobbying reportable activity. Communication in which you're talking about specific legislation but not asking anybody to do anything, just providing information, not lobbying. If you're asked to participate in a hearing, which foundations in Texas are becoming frequently asked to do, to come and participate and provide their thoughts and their research, that's not considered lobbying either, because you're doing it to provide a service to the legislature itself. Next slide, please. So what we're really now needing to think about is every organization has it, from a foundation perspective, has a choice to make as you're thinking about all of the stuff that's been thrown at you. Nonprofit organizations are allowed to do a lot. Foundations are allowed to fund nonprofit organizations to do more than you probably realize. We can talk off the line about that. But the reality is, I think most folks, if you're on this call, know that you have a lot of flexibility about what you can do with the resources at your disposal when it comes to public policy. You have to be smart about how you do it, but there are a lot of ways to go about doing it. And the thing that I think is most important for people to really kind of internalize is that there's no wrong way for any grant maker or any foundation to get involved and engaged in funding, lobbying, and advocacy-related activities. There's only your way. Some folks are going to be on the left-hand side of this, no political purpose intended here, the left-hand side of my continuum, which is where you fund the research, you know, kind of quietly. Folks are going to be, other foundations are going to be on the right-hand side of the continuum, where you're willing to fund organizations who are very, very directly engaged in lobbying-related activities, getting more specific. On the left, you're a little broader. You're doing research. You're doing reports. The middle of the spectrum, some funders are willing to not just fund the research and reports. They want to get the organizations themselves to engage to make sure that the research has a life outside the three-ring binder prison. And then some, increasingly, we're seeing foundations are engaging the trustees themselves to begin the communication with elected officials and policymakers, which is, interestingly, the most effective thing you can do, the cheapest thing you can do in terms of expenditure of your foundation dollars, and doesn't count as a reportable lobby expense because your trustees are volunteers. So really, obviously, that's a triple whammy, so to speak, of positive benefits associated with the trustee engagement on the lobbying. But when you really look at this, what I'm trying to convey here is every organization has a different place, a different – your board of directors has a tolerance threshold for policy-related activities. Everyone does. And you, only you know, you know, kind of where your board sits on this continuum. But the question for you is not to be paralyzed by the fact that you can't be everything on the continuum, but to strategically position yourself most effectively where you are on the continuum. And that's what we want to talk about kind of next. Next slide, please. And in thinking about that, you know, this is kind of a joking slide here, but the question you really have to ask yourselves is, do you want to go at this by yourselves, is your foundation kind of owning it and taking the lead, or do you want to go about this with, you know, a team of, you know, other foundations, other philanthropists who have different specializations and different thresholds back on that continuum? And we'll talk specifically about how the fact that people have different perspectives on the continuum isn't a weakness, but ultimately can be used as an opportunity. But let's talk first about a foundation that decided that it wanted to go on its own. And what we've done is we've boiled down the system that we have for working with foundations and nonprofit organizations. And our clients range from, you know, Texas-based nonprofits and foundations and foundation collaboratives to national and international organizations who want to work in state legislatures and around the Southwest. And a lot of our work is at the Texas Capitol, but we're increasingly branching out at the, you know, Oklahoma, New Mexico, and places like that. But what we kind of specialize in is helping folks who are interested in moving an advocacy agenda that's either never been tried before for whatever reason or has been stuck for whatever reason, and then kind of move it in a manner that really builds new alliances and creates opportunities to create a bigger win for more people. And we've really got a five-step strategy for doing that. You know, first, it's all about focusing on something specific. Every foundation understands that if they want to put their money quarter inch deep, a mile wide, they can do that, or they can put their money in a more concentrated manner. And we believe that not only should they do that in general, but they should specifically do that within their policy-related grant making because of the potential for impact being so strong there. We also urge people, secondly, to build a credible research case. I live in Texas. If research comes from Oklahoma, it's inherently suspect. So if it comes from anywhere else, it's even more suspect. But if it comes from the other side of the Red River, the research is incredible. How do you build whatever your own unique situation is, a research context in which research is available that isn't only available, but also believable and believed by influence makers? And that's a harder proposition than it might sound. Third, we make sure that that research doesn't just sit in a box somewhere as with a three-ring binder that I alluded to earlier, the prison of the binder. We really want to make sure that research gets out into the hands of real people and done in a way that the message won't be lost within the larger noise, which demands that you find, you know, messengers who are not necessarily the normal people to be talking about the message that you're attempting to convey. We'll talk specifically about that in a bit. And then, you know, we really focus on, once we have a very clear focus with a credible research case and a very, very believable messenger, we make sure that whatever that message is that we're trying to empower, we work the political process on its behalf very pragmatically. And then ultimately, we understand that whatever it is we're trying to do has to be implemented by someone, normally a state agency or government entity, and we want to make sure that those people are on our side, not in opposition to us as we're going through the whole process, especially when we're trying to implement whatever bright idea we had. So next slide, please. When you look at a couple of case studies of this, it's really, I want to kind of highlight a couple of organizations here. First, you have the case study of the RGK Foundation, who went out on their own on a public health issue, and had some really significant impact in doing so. It really showed that one foundation took on one issue of very, very, very specific and personal importance to that foundation and kind of moved policies as the Lone Ranger. And then you have the A-Team, the Texas Education Grantmakers Advocacy Consortium, which is a long name for something pretty amazing. And I know that its coordinator, Jen Esterline, is on the phone here. If anyone has questions about the model as we go along, she can probably respond in the chat column there. But there are 31 foundations in Texas who've joined together to address a broad theme of public education of general importance to a lot of people. And how did you possibly get 31 foundations around the table? But you really have to think back about that continuum. And instead of having one foundation representing one part of the continuum, or maybe if you're lucky, two or three parts of the continuum, you have 31 foundations representing every place along the continuum, which is a powerful place to be. So let's look specifically at these two models. So next slide, please. When you look at the Lone Ranger, the RGK Foundation, based here in Austin, Texas, they had a board member, a family member, a trustee who was a former middle school PE teacher, and he was concerned about the fact that it didn't seem like anything was happening to improve that issue, and he wanted to make sure that, you know, if the foundation were going to do anything related to public policy, that it were going to be related to that specific issue, middle school obesity as addressed through physical education activity. So in doing so, he had the focus of the foundation was middle school physical education. They commissioned high quality research from the Michael and Susan Bell Center for Child Health at the University of Texas to propose revenue neutral strategies that were designed specifically to improve middle school physical education, lower obesity, but doing so at little or no cost to the state to make the legislation, you know, more politically viable. They partnered to get the research done, and then they put that research into the hands of unusual suspects ranging from advocates to the faith community to the business community. Worked the political process, partnered with the state and school districts, and with an investment of about $150,000 over about 18 months, were able to pass in statute three of the report's five recommendations. So in doing so, small investment focused on something specific really did achieve a pretty significant result just within the course of a year and a half. Which, next slide, please. Which really empowered a lot of people to step back and say, how do you, you know, kind of take this model where you have foundations who are funding research, putting that research into the hands of advocates, and then taking that, those advocates and making sure that they're engaged in the political process in a way that's not in confrontation with the state and with the entities who have to implement legislation, but really, you know, thoughtfully in partnership with them. And, you know, being mindful of what the research says at the very outset and all the way to the very end. So you had a situation where Texas foundations, because of some budget cuts in 2011, had joined together and really kind of gotten this idea that if they work collectively on public education issues, the legislature will respond and will listen. So, you know, about 2 years ago, the summer of 2013, the Texas Foundation community sat down and began to prioritize within this broad theme of public education. How could you focus, commission the research, put it in the hands of advocates, work it into the political process, and then do it in such a way that there would be and ultimately, at the end, a very positive political outcome that's good for kids and kind of advances the research-based policies that are being promulgated in the first place. So the amazing part of all of this is that 30 Texas foundations over the course of the last 2 years have come together and said, we aren't only going to be – we're going to fund collectively three research projects with three independent, you know, advocacy efforts to ensure that research is promoted and doesn't just live on a shelf. All told, the grand investment over the course of a couple of years in total, about $500,000-$600,000. And a really amazing research, you know, base produced by this that in many ways set the stage for political and policy conversations about important issues like the state's pre-kindergarten program and the availability of guidance counselors for Texas high school students. Previous to the foundation's research projects, Texas had no idea how big pre-kindergarten classrooms were, none, because the data wasn't collected by the state, what the teacher-student ratio was, what the class size was, those kinds of issues, and didn't know how many guidance counselors were available per high school student, middle school student, and elementary school student. The foundations got together, filled that data hole, which drove the policy conversation. There are many ways to drive a policy conversation. By providing good, objective data, you're not taking a partisan side. And the fact that the data was available was supported by Democrats, Republicans, and everybody in between, you know, in a very, very thoughtful and appreciated way. And in many ways, the foundation community, through the presence of high-quality data, was able to set a legislative agenda that ultimately has become law. And now the foundations have positioned themselves to work in true partnership with the governor of Texas and others who are going to be implementing a lot of the policies that the legislature just passed in partnership with them. So next slide, please. So I also think it's important to note that it's kind of like, you know, at the end of the day, if you can't be the governor of California, you have like tax and legal problems or Sylvester Stallone. You know, the Lone Ranger, the RGK Foundation, was one of the founding members of the big foundation consortium. So to give all of them due credit, there's a lot of interesting stuff happening in Texas, a lot of old foundations and younger foundations that are working together and really thinking creatively about how you can maximize the fact that everybody is in a different place on that continuum. And if some folks are funding the research, they can partner with the folks who are funding the advocacy organizations, who can in turn partner with the foundations who are willing to, you know, put their trustees themselves into legislative meetings and into meetings at the Capitol, which is increasingly becoming something that both trustees and legislators themselves are interested in doing. So next slide, please. So just kind of at the out, you know, kind of, you know, wrapping up really the presentation part of this, and I urge people, you know, the first thing you can do is push your grantees to get more engaged. A simple, easy way to do that is to examine the H election with the IRS. It's something that nonprofit organizations can do, and if you're asking your grantee partners to do it, they'll know that you take lobbying seriously and are hoping that they will engage as part of their programmatic activities, advocacy, and policy-related activities as well. and train your organizations and grantees in the basics of nonprofit lobby law and a little bit of advocacy strategy so that they're not only going out and getting engaged, but doing it in a manner that's likely to achieve some kind of policy success. You could always provide general operating grants to your nonprofit partners. Remember that you cannot necessarily earmark funds for lobbying, but you can provide a general operating grant. You can educate and make sure your own legal counsel and accounting staff are educated about the lobby law. And finally, you can begin the work of funding advocacy, funding these kinds of activities, if you're willing to find your place on the continuum, understanding that there's no wrong place, there's only your place to start doing all this. So that's kind of where I'll leave it at that. Next slide, if you could. And I would love to open it up for questions or comments, or tar and feathering, as I always say.
So remember, you all are muted. So if you want to ask a question, please unmute and just go ahead and ask any burning questions you have.
Jason, this is Don Snyder. I'm the CFO of the Flynn Foundation. Can you hear me?
I can, yes.
I'm wondering back to one of your, where you show the continuum with the research and reports, and then in the middle, the grants for to advocacy organization, and then on the other end, trustee engagement. In terms of grants to advocacy organizations, let's assume these are organizations that also lobby. So what are the implications for a private foundation in giving a grant to an organization that may just do advocacy, or it may be an organization that also does lobbying? What do we as private foundations need to know in giving a grant to an organization that may lobby?
Right. Here's the question that I always advise people to ask first, is if an organization that does advocacy work tells you that they don't lobby, they're either confused about the lobby law or they're obfuscating what they're doing. Because inherently, organizations that are effective that are doing advocacy work are going to be doing some kind of lobby-related activities. And the question I always ask people is, are they doing it, and are they doing it in a manner that is as you know, above board as possible? And in doing so, are they protecting themselves as an organization, but protecting you by association? So that's, you know, always ask them up front, are you lobbying, and what percentage of your reportable allowable expenses are you using for lobbying? And this is where the H election, I think, is a really great indicator for organizations, for foundations. If the H election simply tells the IRS, if an organization takes it, it's literally a form that's one-third of a page long, simply saying that we are taking the H election, you designate this, you can do it once, you can do it renewed, it doesn't matter, but as long as you've done it, your organization takes the H election, which simply says that we, as an organization, may be engaged in lobbying-related activities. It does not increase the likelihood of an audit. It doesn't red flag you. It simply says we may be lobbying. And in doing so, the H election brings with it a very specific set of allowable expenditure limits, which are very clearly defined. If you don't take the H election and your grantee doesn't take the H election, those limits are not clearly defined. And if you'd like them to be clearly defined for yourself and for your grantee, and defined as an organization with a budget of $500,000 can spend up to 20% of its budget on direct and grassroots lobbying. So an organization with $500,000 a year budget can spend $100,000 a year on direct and grassroots lobbying. Very, 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 very few organizations that are not designed to be, you know, advocacy nonprofits hit that kind of a threshold. So, you know, your odds are the organizations that you're engaged with aren't even anywhere near that kind of a threshold in terms of their expenditures anyway. because this gives you both clarity so that you can confirm that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, if there aren't other questions, I have another question on that slide with regard to trustee engagement. Now, this is the nonprofits we fund and their trustees, or as a private foundation, could our trustees be lobbying also?
Your trustees can and should be lobbying. The last three sessions of the Texas legislature, the grant makers at the Texas Education Grant Makers Advocacy Consortium, TEGAC.org. It's a really fascinating website. These 30 foundations, and it's very much trustee-driven, they're mostly small family foundations with some of the other big private foundations mixed in, but really mobilization of small family foundations whose trustees who have the resources to have a foundation. And when you begin to engage those people in legislative debates, and we are talking, it has been a wild experience to see very wealthy, literal titans of American industry go to the Texas Capitol with their knees knocking because they have to meet with 24-year-old staffers because they're so out of their comfort zone. So, we kind of think of this as, of course they would be completely unintimidated by this process. They're very intimidated by this process because they feel like they have a lot to lose. And they need to make sure that if they're going to the Capitol, it's being done under very smart, well-thought-out auspices with an ask that is balanced and smart. And we've had great luck bringing trustees in. It's been really kind of a very, very interesting experience when you're in a meeting with a guy who's, very personally self-made millionaire whose foundation makes significant resource investments in early childhood education, and you're having a meeting with a 24-year-old legislative staffer who's attempting to explain why his boss opposes early childhood education legislation to this guy who's making the economic argument, who is pretty irrefutable when he makes any economic argument. The trustee engagement itself has been incredibly powerful, and I haven't seen a better model of that anywhere than what this Education Grant Makers Advocacy Consortium here in Texas has pulled off.
I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. So I understand what you said about the candidates, and it seems like a lot of the strategies are involved with elected officials in office. So what are there any efforts allowed in election time if you know a candidate is, for or against a position that you are in opposition to?
You as an organization, if a candidate is very publicly opposed, if your organization is, for example, for clean water, and the candidate is known to have taken a position contrary to very controversial and public clean water legislation, and you knew that, and you had a candidate event with the sole purpose of making him or her look bad, knowing the context, knowing, or you should have known, the context in which the conversation was be happening, it's tricky. You're on really dangerous ground, I would say.
So what would be allowed? What would be less dangerous ground?
Less dangerous ground would be to have a candidates forum sponsored by multiple organizations where both candidates were invited to attend and your issue was one of many issues that was addressed. Otherwise, it's an ambush of sorts.
Okay. Thanks.
And you would be perceived to be electioneering, which is attempting to steer the conversation toward one candidate or another.
All right. Thank you. Anybody else? Don't be shy.
Jason, are there any additional guidelines for community foundations besides what you're talking about here?
Community foundations, y'all can do so much. I mean, you really can. You can earmark grants for lobbying. You can straight up, you know, give somebody a grant to hire lobbyists. I mean, it's pretty amazing. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, considering how the Kennedy Foundation dollars are invested versus a private foundation, that they have that kind of flexibility. But I think, you know, there's also, you know, the consortium and Jen Esterlin are organizing some Texas community foundations to have that kind of a conversation, knowing that there's a lot of potential there that's unique and different. And I think that from an advocacy perspective, the most potentially interesting and creative work could be happening in community foundations simply because of the expanded flexibility in comparison to the private guys. Not that the private guys cannot do a lot, because they can. It's just that the restrictions are just so much different related to the community foundations.
Thanks.
So you're even less likely to get in trouble, in other words. Well, one thing I would say, no, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, this is Brent popping in with a quick question. Lots of times when people think about lobbying in particular, they think about the Texas ethics rules that might require people to be formally registered as a lobbyist. Can you say a bit about whether or not that's any kind of a consideration that people should be thinking about, and how does that work?
Well, you know, it is a consideration, and I think that it's more of a consideration in terms of, if any individual who can imagine themselves going to the Capitol once or twice or three times even during the session, you don't need to register. You're an ordinary citizen who's making his or her opinions known. If the registration for me really becomes an issue when you're thinking about the organizations that you all fund, and in many ways, nonprofit organizations are schizophrenic about this because they feel like the lobby law in Texas, and you know, I'm registered in Oklahoma this year too, and the lobby law, which is even tighter, actually, in many ways. The lobby laws in most of the states in the region, I mean, they're pretty good, and they're there for a reason. And I think that it's important that nonprofit organizations register the people that they have lobbying, you know, lobby. And I think that's good for foundations to ask. And I think that the ask from philanthropy should be not that it's a negative if you're registered, if you have someone on staff who's a registered lobbyist, but it's a positive thing that you have someone on staff who's a registered lobbyist, because by doing so, their organization is recognizing that the Ethics Commission rules and laws matter. And if foundations begin to send the message to advocacy grantees that you get a gold star in your book because you're doing your due diligence and getting registered to lobby, that would be really good for the nonprofit community, because it would send a message that you all understand that lobbying is important and that it's something that they're doing and that they should be doing openly, not having to feel like it's something that they need to, like, be embarrassed about almost with their funders. Could we go to the last slide, please?
Yeah, sorry. Oops. A different webinar.
One thing that I would say really quickly to folks is that there are a lot of resources available to you to how to do this work wisely and well. And I know that, you know, obviously Philanthropy Southwest has tons of resources available, but I also would encourage you to take advantage of what other foundations are doing around the country and around this particular region. I know that there's some really interesting stuff happening in, you know, New Mexico, on home visiting, people working together. I know in Texas we've got the big public education collaboration. So I just know that there's a lot of interesting movement, you know, on the ground right now, and that a lot of the big national foundations that I work with are very interested in this public world. And they're very, very interested in working with multiple foundations together. And I know that seems to be really an opportunity in the making for those of us doing this kind of work, kind of at the state policy level, is how do we do a better job of kind of replicating with this consortium around public education that's done here in Texas to make sure that we're all kind of working cooperatively to cover as broad of the advocacy base that we possibly can.
Any other questions? I don't think we have any.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jason, for spending your time or your hour with us. We really, really appreciate it. And thank you to everybody who participated in the webinar. The recording and the slides will be posted in our resources section on our website, hopefully by tomorrow. And, again, Jason volunteered his time, a little arm twisting from me, to do this. And so if you have any questions, he's offered himself as a resource for you. Please feel free to reach out to him.
Thank you so much, Jason.
Thank you, Jason. Great job, Pam.
Thanks, everyone.